This is Dr. Matthew Klein, and you are listening to the Water Values Podcast.
The Water Values Podcast is sponsored by the following market-leading companies and organizations. By Xylem, Let's Solve Water. By the American Water Works Association, dedicated to the world's most important resource. By Black & Veatch, building a world of difference. By 120 Water, new rules need new tools. By Advanced Drainage Systems, our reason is water. By 1898 & Co., possibilities powered by experience. By Woodard & Curran, high-quality consulting engineering, science, and operations service. And by Intera, innovation and stewardship for a sustainable tomorrow. This is Session 266.
Welcome to the Water Values Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to water utilities, resources, treatment, reuse, and all things water. Now here's your host, Dave McGibson.
Hello and welcome to another session of the Water Values Podcast. As my daughter Sarah said, my name is Dave McGibson, and thank you so much for joining me. And of course, thank you for your support over the last 10 plus years. Today's guest is going to blow you away. Yes, we've got Prakash Govindan, the COO and co-founder of Gradient. Prakash relates the story from his humble beginnings in India to MIT, where he earned a PhD and, in his words, became unemployable, so he had to found a company to work. And boy, did Prakash ever found a company. Just hang tight and wait for Prakash's remarkable interview. It's coming up real soon. Well, as you know, we always say thank you to our awesome sponsors at the top of every show, and we have some fantastic sponsors. Our sponsors include Xylem, the American Water Works Association, Black & Veatch, 120 Water, Advanced Drainage Systems, 1898 & Co., Woodard & Curran, and Intera. And that, my friends, is a terrific collection of impactful companies that have affirmatively decided to support water industry thought leadership and education. And I thank you all. And I'd like for you, the listener, to please do me a favor. If you work for or with any of the sponsors, please thank your boss or thank your contact at the sponsor firm and let them know that you appreciate their leadership in the industry through the sponsorship. You'd be surprised how far that simple little note of thanks will go. And hey, as long as you're letting the sponsors know you appreciate their support of water industry education and thought leadership, why not leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast directory you're accessing the podcast on? It'd be greatly appreciated and, of course, helps others find out about the podcast. And also, please don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. Yes, I'm told that's somewhat important. Now it's time for the main event, our interview with Prakash Govindan, COO and co-founder of Gradient. So let's get that water flowing. Well, Prakash, welcome to the Water Values Podcast. Great to have you on. How are you doing today?
I'm very good, David. Thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation today. For those who may not know about you or Gradient, can you kind of tell us a little about who you are and your background and how you came to the water sector?
Absolutely. So I grew up in South India, in a town called Chennai, which, most of India receives its rainfall through monsoons. And Chennai and that part of the state called Tamil Nadu is unique in that it receives only return monsoons. And sometimes these monsoons return and sometimes they don't. So when I grew up, there was a severe water shortage in Chennai, and I grew up in a middle-class household. So part of our duty as teenagers, me and my brother, was to go downstairs two times a week. We lived in an apartment complex, a small apartment complex, and there was no tap water. So we used to go downstairs and bring water in pails back to our houses. So that's my education around the importance of water. You know, people say because water is not priced right, it's not valued. If everyone goes through this experience of living in a water stress situation, then you don't need it to even price it right. So that's my background. And when I got an opportunity and an admission to MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, I seeked out the water guru at MIT, John Leonhard, and he gave me a stipend and a fellowship to do my PhD. So that's where I really started on water research and ended up inventing industrial zero liquid discharge, minimum liquid discharge technologies at MIT. And as a result, became unemployable and had to start a company to employ myself. So met Anurag at MIT. He was my buddy at MIT. We did PhD together in the same lab. He worked with another professor, Gong Chen, who's one of the institute professors at MIT. And we really hit it along. We've been working together for 16 years and, like brothers at this point. So we started Gradient and lo and behold, 11 years later, from two people in a basement to 1,100 people plus now and in 20 countries and profitable $300 million in revenue and $500 million in sales in the first half of the year.
Wow. That's a success story for sure. So can you, what does Gradient do? I kind of have a hint that you referenced ZLD or MLD, so I've got a hint. So can you tell us a little bit about what Gradient actually does?
So what we do is we solve societal problems, which are solved by technology. We are a unique kind of water company. For example, if you take lithium extraction is the gating factor to electrification of transport. Tesla can't build cars to the capacity that they're receiving orders if we cannot mine more and more lithium. Last year, less than a million tons of lithium was mined globally. Even by conservative estimates, we need that number to quadruple in the next 7-8 years. We can't continue to mine lithium from spodumene, hard rock and clay. So because the low end of the cost curve of mining lithium is from brines. So lo and behold, Gradient goes in. We are able to extract, concentrate and convert brines to battery-grade lithium hydroxide and lithium carbonate. So solving societal problems. Another example is PFAS, forever chemicals, huge problem. The US EPA has now mandated a 4 PPT limit for PFOA and PFOS, and that's not parts per thousand. That's PPT parts per trillion, not million, not billion, trillion. So Gradient has the ability to not only separate that PFAS from the water, but also concentrate and completely destroy PFAS. Semiconductor industry, a typical chip foundry consumes 40 million liters of water a day. And these foundries are increasingly placed in water scarce regions. Gradient has the technology to take the wastewater. All this 40 million liters is first converted into ultra pure water. Then it comes in contact with different processes where different grades of wastewater are produced. Gradient enables reuse. 99% reuse in some facilities that we are working with. So cutting the water withdrawal rate from 40 million liters to 400,000 liters. For Americans, that is 10 million gallons down to 100,000 gallons. So paradigm change in water sustainability by industrial reuse. That was a long answer.
Yeah.
Was it okay?
Yeah, that is. Oh, of course. Absolutely, Prakash. It would be fascinating to talk more about lithium and PFAS, but I really want to focus on industrial wastewater reuse in this episode. So can you talk a little about, you mentioned semiconductor manufacturers when you were talking about wastewater reuse, and can you talk just about the process? Why are these why do you think that these semiconductor manufacturing facilities are being placed in water scarce regions? Because that is a huge question in my mind that I can't wrap my head around in terms of why these.
It is twofold, David. In one case, water is not entering the equation when they are deciding where to place the fabs. For example, there was a Wall Street Journal article maybe two to three days ago, over the weekend perhaps, where a foundry is being contemplated here in the Middle East. And I'm involved, Mubadala, which is the sovereign wealth fund of the Emirates, UAE, owns majority of Global Foundries, one of our customers. And I made a presentation to them. They are doing feasibility studies in placing a semiconductor chip foundry here. And the reason behind that is, you know, national security concerns. The same reason the CHIPS Act in the U.S. was passed, because with increasing influence of China in their own backyard and with Taiwan and so on, geopolitical things that are beyond my forte, all these other major countries like the U.S., like the Emirates, and Europe are thinking about how they can produce their own microchips. Why should I rely on Taiwan, which is by far the market leader, which is in the backyard of China? What if some war breaks out? So for national security reasons, they're trying to place chip foundries. And in such discussions, the water is not entering the decision-making matrix early enough. The other aspect of this is even a water-rich place like Taiwan can become water-scarce if you put a lot of these industries there. Advanced manufacturing, Taiwan's GDP is heavily linked to production of microchips and LEDs and such advanced manufacturing. So singularly, this has become the reason that Taiwan has become more water scarce. As a mind-blowing statistic, about 60% of all water use, all water withdrawn from natural bodies in Taiwan is for these industries, mainly for semiconductor.
Wow, 60, that's a staggering percentage, especially when you think in the about the United States, the vast majority of water is used in agriculture rather than a manufacturing process.
That's right. No, I love this example. Mr. Elon Musk, you know, he decided to build a gigafactory outside of Berlin. And when he was breaking ground, he had a press conference and one of the journalists asked him, "What about water?" And he laughed, you know, in his typical enigmatic style. He laughed and he said, "Look around you. This is not Saudi Arabia. This is Berlin. This is Germany. We have water." And lo and behold, 18 months after he did this press conference, after having built most of his factory, he was not given permits to start the factory because he was going to end up consuming too much water for his gigafactory. And, water companies, Gradient, for example, went in and we enabled recycling to facilitate the functioning of this factory. So even a place like Berlin, which is water rich, can become water stressed because of presence of industry. Typically, this statistic is quoted that most industrial use of water is agriculture. While on a theoretical level, that is correct, the low-hanging fruit of enabling water sustainability globally is non-agriculture industrial reuse.
Right. And so, well, it's So the low-hanging fruit is really conservation, right? And then because conservation has by and large already been achieved in very water-intensive industries, I think then the next low-hanging fruit is what you're describing is industrial water reuse and recycling. And so can you talk a little about how Gradient fits into that, or the industrial water reuse and recycling fits into the whole equation of water sustainability and stewardship?
Absolutely. Like I mentioned before, we close the loop within within industries, and we work across sectors, David. If you look at our revenue mix, semiconductors, of course, big because we get big projects. We recently won a $350 million industrial reuse zero liquid discharge project in semiconductor. But in addition, we also have substantial projects and revenue from food and beverage, from mining, from renewable energy production of photovoltaic cells, for example. And in each of these examples, we are able to cut the water withdrawal of a particular factory, particular manufacturing, particular operations to a 10, sometimes to 100, doing 99% recovery, but typically always greater than 90% recovery using our cutting-edge technology. So we have a proprietary technology stack that we deploy, but we are not just a technology company. We are a solutions company, much like Veolia, if you will. And we are going in and we are solving the end-to-end problem. We are taking the wastewater. We are cleaning it up and producing water at a quality which can be reused in situ.
All right. So what are some of the innovations that have come through in this paradigm of wastewater reuse and the technological adaptations that are coming about?
And I'll talk about a couple of things that Gradient has done. There is to enable minimum liquid discharge and increase the recoveries, the main innovation we have come up with is the counterflow reverse osmosis. So you are an expert in the matter, David, and reverse osmosis, you and your audience understands well. There's a limit to how much concentration you can do with typical cross-flow membranes and cross-flow configurations of reverse osmosis. Typical RO is cross-flow from the point of view of the fluid. So what we have been able to do is make these membranes counterflow, in that there is a secondary stream going on the permeate side, which is which has some level of salinity, cutting the osmotic pressure differential between the feed and the permeate side. And when this is done over many cascaded stages, we are able to produce fresh water from hypersaline water and concentrate it all the way up to saturation of salt. For example, current seawater RO, for example, you take seawater in at 3.5% salinity, you're able to concentrate it to 7%, 8% and produce, 50% as fresh water, more or less, 40%, 50%, whatever it is. What Gradient is able to do with similar salinity waters, say 3.5% water, is we are able to concentrate it to 25% salinity just using RO. In order to go to 25% salinity, previously one had to employ thermal energy and evaporators. We don't use thermal energy. So this is a major innovation. Of course, even within the RO paradigm where reuse plants often use RO, right? Not all the time, but some of the time. The other big innovation that has happened over the last 10 years is the energy recovery devices, which have cut the energy consumption of RO by a large percentage. ERI, for example, is the company that has successfully commercialized energy recovery devices. So those are two things I can think of.
Yeah. I've also heard about gradients, like short bed distillation and CFRO, and maybe those are what you were talking about, and I'm just not smart enough to figure that out. Also, carrier gas extraction is another one that comes to mind.
Carrier gas extraction is my favorite because it was the topic of my PhD thesis.
Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah, just to clarify, David, previously I talked about counterflow reverse osmosis, which is CFRO.
Okay.
Carrier gas extraction is a smart evaporator. So it is based on mimicking nature's rain cycle. The rain cycle desalinates seawater, basically, and other waters. How it works is the sun shines on the top of oceans because of the partial pressure effect, because of the presence of an atmosphere above the ocean surface. Even at low temperatures, there is evaporation from the surface of the ocean. And the vapor, when it goes into the air via evaporation, the air becomes less dense, so it raises to form clouds. And ideally, it rains over land to produce fresh water from seawater. However, the nature has infinite surface area, basically, the whole, how much ever surface area it needs, it has via the surface of the ocean and free energy in solar irradiation. So when we industrialize this device into this process into a device, you have to build a humidifier or a cloud producing device and a dehumidifier or a rain producing device, which is ultra efficient. So over 5 years at MIT during my PhD and over 11 years now at Gradient, we have perfected that. We have also, the reason I was awarded a PhD is I came up with a non-dimensional number which looks at all the parameters within this device, within, for example, temperature, pressure, humidity, concentration, at various points before the humidification device, after the humidification device, before the dehumidification, after the dehumidification. And it collapses all of those values into one non-dimensional number, which I like to call Leonhard number after my PhD thesis advisor, which is sacrosanct. What we figured out via the science is when that number is maintained at a value of one, irrespective of the quality of water coming in, you get peak thermal performance, peak energy recovery. So we designed an artificial intelligence algorithm back in the day, 11 years ago, when AI was not sexy. We designed an AI algorithm for this device, which will, which at the heart of it had this non-dimensional number. And based on the water coming in and the sensors and the reading from the sensors, it will adjust the system to continuously operate at a value of one, the non-dimensional equal to value of one. And hence, it's a smart evaporator. The evaporators typically work at a set point, right? When the set point changes, the efficiency drops. But this evaporator, the CGE, carrier gas extraction, is able to work at the stated efficiency irrespective of changing conditions. And this is why it's been deployed now in more than a couple of dozen large water treatment plants around the world.
Fascinating stuff. So we talked about, you know, manufacturing processes, and I suspect there, you know, there's two kinds. Greenfield, where they know they've got water sustainability and stewardship issues. And so they're building a new factory. They know they want to use industrial water reuse. There's also brownfield where you have an existing factory that needs to improve its water sustainability. So how do you approach the two, you know, a greenfield versus brownfield development? Are there differences? What do you look at there?
There are definitely differences. For example, in the project development itself, there are differences. In the KPIs, there are differences. Again, maybe I should take the semiconductor example, right? A typical chip foundry to be developed takes a period of time, just from a gradient point of view, this big order that we signed that I mentioned to you with the zero liquid discharge system, that took 18 months of development before we were awarded the project. And we were involved from the very first phase before any other water company, where we helped the customer write the RFI by doing water quality testing, by looking at working with their project management company and looking at their chip foundry design to optimize for water. And for all the way from there, down to the bidding and the development of the pricing and the award of the contract, it took 18 months to happen. And you get a lot of flexibility around design when it's a greenfield project, at some level of flexibility at least. Sometimes you don't get that much because it's greenfield. You can design it into the plant. Brownfield projects are a little more rigid, a little more challenging from a footprint point of view, even from a cost point of view. I'll give you another example. We did a project for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline in Singapore. And this was a 30-year-old amoxicillin production facility. And PUB had updated their discharge quality, permittable discharge quality standards for the effluent. And over 30 years, the water treatment plants, wastewater treatment reuse plants within the site had become redundant because they were discharging off spec. And PUB came to us and said, help GSK. And we worked with GSK to design in a very cramped space. Singapore already has less space. This 30-year-old, you can imagine a 30-year-old, you know, amoxicillin production facility, a pharmaceutical facility, had all kinds of legacy stuff in it. We got very less footprint. We had to be very creative with the power and the process train also, because we had to deliver a very high standard of discharge water. And hence just drawing a contrast, right, between brownfield and greenfield, there are substantial differences, but the sales cycle or the project development cycle is much smaller, shorter for us with brownfield projects.
You know, it sounds like you're doing what they tell all entrepreneurs to do, right? Is you develop a solution that is based on customer problems rather than developing a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. So, kudos to you for unlocking that key. You know, you mentioned the legacy amoxicillin facility in Singapore, and that just kind of sprung in my mind. Like, how do you try and anticipate what future demands? How do you kind of future-proof, so to speak, the solutions you're delivering to clients?
Well, you have to stay at the cutting edge of R&D and technology. For example, when we started, we were not into providing artificial intelligence and machine learning services for our clients. But it has become a huge part of what we offer in terms of differentiated services to our clients. So we have developed, and I'm a finite time thermodynamist and a mechanical engineer, and I've been the technical head of Gradient since its beginning. And I know nothing about software and stuff, but we have developed our R&D team, which at this point has 50 plus researchers, new product developers, PhDs from MIT and the best schools around the world. That for me is the secret sauce in continuing to stay updated in delivering what the customer needs.
Phenomenal. Prakash, you have been absolutely fantastic today. It has been a terrific discussion. I've learned a tremendous amount, and just getting your, you know, having you download some of your knowledge for us has just been phenomenal. Do you have a leave behind message you'd like to leave the listeners with?
Water is not just part of the puzzle anymore. with industrial to enable thriving of industry. Water is the puzzle. It's not just part of the puzzle. It is the puzzle. And I would really like the help of my colleagues from the industry, from other companies, to help us elevate water to what it really deserves. If you know, people are looking for exoplanets where life is present. You know, the first thing they look for, signatures of liquid water, because without water, there's no life.
Absolutely. Well said. Well said, Prakash. Again, you've been phenomenal. Terrific. For those who want to find out more about Gradient and about you, which I'm sure after listening to this, they're going to want to do, can you tell us where they can go to find that information?
Sure, David. I also want to say it's a pleasure to be on the podcast, and I listen to it often. It's fantastic. So kudos to you also. To find Gradient, please go to www.gradient.com. That is GRADIANT, not ENT, ANT.com.
Awesome. Well, again, Prakash, thank you so much for coming on. It was fantastic to speak with you, and I look forward to chatting again someday. Thanks so much.
Sure, David. Take care.
Take care. Bye. You know, I've had some great guests in the past, and they have delivered some fantastic lines over the last 10 plus years. But I think Prakash's statement that water isn't just a piece of the puzzle, it is the puzzle, has got to rank near the top. It's just such a simple yet insightful phrasing that I think many of us believe. And thank you for your time, Prakash. I know your time demands are significant, and I'm very thankful you made 30 minutes for me to come onto the podcast. So thank you so much. Well, I'd love to know what you thought about the interview. Please check out the show notes page for information and links on this episode. Just Google the Water Values Podcast. Click the first link that comes up. That's our home on the web that Bluefield Research provides. Longtime listeners know that Bluefield Research and the Water Values LLC are not affiliates. We just have a joint marketing arrangement, and as part of that, Bluefield gives us a home on the web. You can email me at david.mcgimsey@dentons.com. You can sign up for the newsletter at that landing page I mentioned as well. Thank you again for tuning in, and I hope you make it a great day. Plus, I want to give a huge thank you again to our fantastic sponsors. Sponsors of the Water Values Podcast include Xylem, the American Waterworks Association, Black & Veatch, 120 Water, Advanced Drainage Systems, 1898 & Co., Woodard & Curran, and Intera. And this show would not be possible without those great companies and industry leaders. And again, thank you for listening and for subscribing to the Water Values Podcast. Your support is truly appreciated. In closing, please remember to keep the core message of the Water Values Podcast in mind as you go about your daily business. Water is our most valuable resource, so please join me by going out into the world and acting like it.
Listening to the Water Values Podcast. Thank you for spending some of your day with my dad and me.
Well, thank you for tuning in to the disclaimer. I'm a lawyer licensed in Indiana and Colorado, and nothing in this podcast should be taken as providing legal advice or as establishing an attorney-client relationship with you or with anyone else. Additionally, nothing in this podcast should be considered a solicitation for professional employment. I'm just a lawyer that finds water issues interesting and that believes greater public education is needed about water issues. And that includes enhancing my own education about water issues, because no one knows everything about water.